As the business world and the economic context continues to shift, the relationship between agencies and companies, organizations, nonprofits, governments continues to evolve. There's been many different forms this kind of collaboration has taken in the past, where an outside partner provides critical services. But in this day and age, when a lot of basic fundamental things can be done with AI, we've gone through a period of offshoring and then nearshoring and then reshoring, the way in which agencies work together or work with independent contractors or subcontractors, freelancers, et cetera, to deliver client results continues to evolve. And it doesn't always go smoothly. There are a lot of bumps in the road because everyone has needs, but it is an important topic to think about as we think about how we work and work together in 2026. Abby, what's on your mind?
Well, that's exactly what's on my mind, and is this idea of collaboration and sharing resources. Over the last handful of weeks, on several occasions, there have been conversations between myself and my agency colleagues here in the Valley and here in Arizona, but really around the country, where can you help? I need, boots on the ground. I need to buy 5 hours of your time because I'm, stuck on a project and need some assistance. And what really was resonating with me in all of those conversations was on, comparatively, if you compare what I do to what they do, we're competitors. We're all offering up the same kind of services. But when it comes down to client expectations and client service, we can kind of put some of that to the side a little bit and realize that we can help each other out. And that although we may be competitors, there's opportunity to work together. And it was a real refreshing conversation I had just a few days ago. I share a client with an agency here in the market, and the client is going through some internal evaluation and some changes might be coming down the pike for, what they're going to do with their external agencies. And rather than us, putting a dividing line in the sand and competing, we spent some time talking about how we can enhance each other's involvement in the client and what it might mean if we can, continue to work together on behalf of the same organization, if in fact the organization does make a change and one or the other of us is no longer working, what would we do? How will we make that transition happen? So that the client who means so much to both of us is still well served and well positioned moving forward. And it was so refreshing to have this conversation, someone that I like and respect very much in the marketplace, and to recognize that we were on a similar mindset there, that we could do this and work together on behalf of this particular organization and maybe, convince them that keeping us both on board offers two different perspectives, two different ways of looking at things that ultimately is for the good of the order. Came up in another conversation there's a large contract going out to bid here in Arizona. A pre-bid meeting was held, and there was about 120 agencies on that call, which in and of itself is fascinating. But during the phone call, the Zoom call that we were listening in on, a couple colleagues reached out via text message and said, "Hey, we aren't going to go after this part of the business. Would you like to and partner with us?" And I'm thinking the same way. There's parts of that contract that I'm not going to be able to do, but here's a way for all of us to get a little bit of piece of the work. And it was just a nice conversation about, collaborating, about working together, about recognizing, at least in my mind, that the end goal needs to live in the client side and that there's a place for all of us. There's plenty of business out there for all of us. And we can be friendly competitors, but we can also be valuable resources for each other in assisting and moving work forward. And it was great. It was just a nice conversations and really a good reminder about the professionalism and the collegial nature of at least those in my immediate network in this business. And it was nice. It was nice to have that kind of week to listen to some of those kind of conversations.
Well, I mean, that's exactly how it should be. The idea of competition itself should be questioned, I think. There is more than enough work that needs to be done. And then the mechanics of working that out are a problem. So certainly having solid relationships based on real human connections and trust and et cetera are an important part of the background. And that doesn't handle all the specifics. You know, I'm fascinated if I think about this for more than 5 seconds, that this fits into such an interesting arc in the history of agency work. Because, you know, there was a time when certainly advertising agencies, which PR is not, but you're sort of adjacent to, sometimes lumped into the same larger bucket, marketing communications, advertising agencies had a very clear pricing structure. It was tied entirely to media buying commissions. And then as media buying and the commission model became unbundled from the services that were being provided, this is relatively recently, this is the 80s and the 90s, you had the adoption, which was, I mean, this was always there, but it became sort of the de facto borrowing the billable hour idea from law firms who had gotten it in the early 1900s from the guy who created that concept.
Yeah, who is
and
that
this fee
guy?
For service. Well, I did
like
look
to
it
talk
up,
to
actually.
That guy.
That guy specifically is an attorney named Reginald Heber Smith. Since
so
you
Reggie
asked.
Smith
Reggie
decided
wrecked it for
that
everyone.
We
but,
needed
I mean,
to be billing people. Well, then law firms staged in 6 minute increments, but oh, that Reggie.
Well, Reggie did that for the law firms, and I'm not sure. I mean, I think David Ogilvy may have had a role in helping to push this model for the creative shops, but we are finding that increasingly challenged, and certainly the alternative. So that's pricing contracts based on time and materials. The alternative, well, there's more than one, but an alternative is value-based pricing, where you work out, preferably in a conversation with the buyer, what the value of the project, if completed successfully, would mean, and then what an appropriate percentage or range of investment would be to get the work done to create that value. So when done well, there's a open conversation about the value to be created and captured by both parties. Of course, a lot of people who buy creative or media or public relations communication services don't want to be fully transparent. You may not be talking to the person who has budgetary authority to do more than spend what they've been allocated, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of complexity there. The thing that I am thinking about newly, based on what you said at the start of this conversation, is how do we bill each other for services, especially when this kind of flexible collaboration is becoming increasingly important? You know, the agency of record, the full service agency, which was often not always true. I mean, the people use the word full service to mean a lot of things. Sometimes it was a small agency pretending to be bigger than it was. Sometimes it really was a really large firm with multiple departments that could do everything internally. That world is mostly going away as cheaper talent, AI tools, et cetera, are changing the way we get things done. But we still have to figure out this problem of how we bill each other.
Well, and great question. And I might have an oversimplified answer to it, but my thinking is, I think about these relationships and these collaborations, and if I need something that you offer, I've already got the project, I did the work, I got the client in, I have the contract, I need you to help me deliver on a particular part of it. In my view, some of what you have to put into your budgeting is the efforts you need to get the work in the first place. So you know, some of that factors in the new business development costs and things like that. But if I'm coming to you and saying, I need this service from you, my total budget is X, I am able to carve out Y, will you do this for me? My hope is the answer is yes, because the amount of work you did not need to do the same amount of work to get that business because I handed it to you. And in theory, that should be compensated in such a way, right? So that the budget is this, and I want you to deliver this with me on that particular.
Yeah, should be factored in.
Right.
The cost of sale, you don't have to invest to get the deal. Yes.
Right. If you and I identify an opportunity that we want to go in on together, you know, X client needs this service and we're going to go together and we're going to create the proposal and the pitch and do all of that, then we should be equally compensated for the outcome and create a budget that allows both of us to be fairly compensated. And then the other version of that is the, you know, that if it's an hourly based project and I can charge the client $200 an hour, I need you to help me do some of that work, but I can give you $100 an hour, and that may be less than what you would typically charge. But again, I'm handing you the work without the effort. My goal is always in these collaborative opportunities is if you need me in order to be successful for your client, if what I offer to you means you can do the work better for your client, I want to help you do that. I want to be a valued partner, and I want to be in the system with you in order for it to be successful, because ultimately it's successful for me too. I can't do it for free, but I also don't necessarily have to do it at my, you know, same hourly rate or my same project rate or however I would budget it as if I was going after this business by myself. Now, I don't think everyone necessarily agrees with that philosophy, but to me, it makes the most sense if as a result of my relationship and the work that I've done to bring this project to you, and I'm asking you to help me deliver on a particular element of it, my hope is that that's where the, you know, the relationship and the long-term commitment, you know, the working relationship comes in. And at the end of the game, when we're done and the project is over, we together are seen as successful, there's likely more work to be done. You know, you do something good, you get that back.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's why I think, although I'm not sure I've ever heard these terms put together in this way, thinking about some kind of value-based pricing for our private collaborations on behalf of clients might also make sense. I mean, oftentimes value-based pricing is seen as a way to get more money from the client because you're going to look at the bigger picture and the value to be created and then try to get a percentage of that. It's not necessarily wrong, but that's also not the spirit of value-based pricing. In its classical form, value-based pricing is a way of talking about the contributions that are being made, the value that's being created, which some of which is economic value for sure, but some of which is non-economic forms of value, like relationships, status, ease, peace of mind. You know, there's all kinds of things that create the value to a buyer. People are sometimes willing to pay more for something they have to do less oversight and management of. That's worth something. Should you use the same billable hour rate for everything? Just no. It's just easier, and clients sometimes demand it, and we have gotten locked into this sort of thing. When we talk about working together, and you know, it's interesting, Abby, you and I have done a number of different collaborations. I, as a solo consultant, own my own business. I don't have a lot of overhead. I don't have, you know, other staff on my payroll. I have some flexibility when it comes to thinking creatively about the value that I'm going to add and then also capture in return. There's a long-term relationship here. We've known each other and been working together in various ways since 2018. Even right before we started this conversation, you said, I have a possibility of something. Here's what it is. What could you do for that? Well, this, you know, it's pretty easy for me to say, yeah, you know, that's less than I would have charged the client directly, but it's also a client I wasn't going to get otherwise. And it's something we could do together, and that would be mutually reinforcing in all kinds of ways. So cool. It took, what, 2.5 minutes for us to essentially form an agreement about something. That's a relatively simple example. It's two business owners with the complete freedom to decide things for themselves and the history of productive collaborations, just forming an agreement. The examples that you mentioned are not that simple. And I think we have to acknowledge that. You know, when you're talking about joining forces with another mid to large firm, size-wise, on a relatively big project with a relatively large scope, there's pieces of that you're going to do. I am curious to know how you would think about that. So I think you just described how you would think about it if you were the lead and you asked somebody else to contribute. But what about the case where the folks are texting you saying, we're not going to do this part of it. That's your area of expertise. How do you think for yourself about pricing your services when you're the essentially sub?
Yep. Well, and I think in the particular case here, it is because it's at the beginning of a relationship and it is in the proposal stage, I can be a little more definitive about what my hourly rate, my blended hourly rate needs to be. You know, typically, if we're going through this, this is what I would charge. This is the scope of work that I'm capable of delivering. These are the senior practitioners that would be, you know, part of this project if we get it. So therefore, here's what it would be. And the
blended rate idea implies there's also some junior people
correct.
Who are going to be doing some stuff.
Correct.
And you're factoring that into your cost management on your side. You know, that's not the client's business.
Correct. And it really is about, you know, it's really at that particular stage of the game, it's about making sure that the knowledge and expertise that is being brought into this proposal justifies whatever it is I'm trying to, you know, get for my hourly rate. If the situation was slightly different in that particular agency has already gotten the work and they realize that they don't have this element and the client has said, we'd really like to deliver some PR services, who would you recommend, whatever that would be, and they would say they can do it, and then they would come and ask me to do it, I would suspect in a very similar fashion that there would be an allocated budget. And the question would be, Abby, can you do these deliverables within this budget? If there is no budget defined, then I have the opportunity to say, happy to do it. This is what it will cost you to do it. And here's where the distinction is for me in all of these cases. You know, there is definitely value in already having an established relationship with, let's just call them partner organizations, right? You, as you said, you and I have been working together for almost 10 years. I don't have to justify to any of my potential clients that this partner that I'm going to bring in is worthy. That I wouldn't be bringing you to the table if it weren't. So the trust factor in me means I'm going to bring other trustworthy people. You and I know and can work well together. So I can say to you, this is my total budget. This is what I'm going to allocate out. So I think in the same context, if the situation is reversed, if I already have a relationship with these other colleagues, and again, if it's a local agency, if it's someone from another market that's looking for boots on the ground in Phoenix, wherever that is, if I already know those people, trust them, have a real knowledge of how they work and the way they want to do it, I have a lot more comfort level in my flexibility for, you know, what the pricing might look like. If I get a phone call out of the blue from an agency partner in another an agency in another market that I've not worked with yet, I might be a little more strict, at least in the early stages, with what I need to get in order to make that work, because I don't have that strong working relationship with them, which is a whole nother topic on networking and why it's important to build those relationships. But, you know, the bottom line for me on all of these things is really about the delivery to the client, the expectations that the client has set out, and putting the right team together in order to deliver on those things. And whether that's from in-house or whether that means bringing people from other related entities into the mold, then that works, you know, that's great. We have, I believe, a responsibility to make sure that as an industry, and those of us that work in this industry, that people believe in and support the importance of strategic public relations services. And therefore, it is on us to make sure that we bring together the right team, that we put the right people out there, that we structure the relationship in a positive way. Yes, we have to make money. I mean, we're not doing this out of the goodness of our heart all the time, but that comes from the relationships we build prior to needing them. It's why I can be on a call with 120 colleagues and get people text messaging that says, I like what you had to say. Could we figure out a way to partner together? And me having no qualms whatsoever about doing it. It's why I can have a conversation with an agency colleague that we share a client that, you know, yeah, we might not both end up at the end of the day on the same work, but while we're still working together, let's work together. Let's make sure that we put forth the best efforts we both can to keep what we do top of mind for the client, that they understand the value in what we offer, and that both of us have different ways of going about the business, but both benefit you as the client. In the long run, whatever the outcome of any of those conversations is going to be, whether I partner with any of those on those proposals or whether either one of us on the other project keeps the client, my value in those conversations, the value I place in those conversations, is the fact that they could happen and that we are at HMA Public Relations have a strong enough reputation in the marketplace that people want to partner with us, and that I have relationships with my colleagues that I want to partner with them. And in the long run, that to me levels the playing field and makes all of this the reason why we do the work that we do.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Copper State of Mind. If you enjoyed the conversation, please share it with a colleague who might also find this podcast valuable. It's easy to do. Just click the share button in the app you're listening to now to pass it along. You can also follow Copper State of Mind in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other podcast app. We publish new episodes every other Friday. Copper State of Mind is brought to you by HMA Public Relations, the oldest continuously operating PR firm in Arizona. The show is recorded and produced by the team at Speed of Story, a B2B communications firm in Phoenix, and distributed by PHX.fm, the leading independent B2B podcast network in Arizona. For all of us here at Speed of Story and PHX.fm, I'm Adrian McIntyre. Thanks for listening and for sharing the show with others if you choose to do so. We hope you'll join us again for another episode of Copper State of Mind.